What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Small Lake City Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Nilsson, excited to bring to you episode number 30, the big 3-0. I can't believe it's almost been 6 months since launching the podcast, and we've done 30 episodes. It's crazy to see how much everything has kept going and growing. And so grateful for everybody for following along, listening along, and sharing all of these episodes with your friends and family. So much gratitude for all of you. I'm excited to keep bringing you more podcasts as we move forward, starting with this one, where we're going to jump back into politics. So we've had a number of political guests ranging from the federal level all the way down to the local level and nonprofits, but really want to talk about the core of Salt Lake City itself. So our guest this week is better known as Councilwoman Ava Lopez Chavez, the councilwoman that covers the heart of Utah, the heart of Salt Lake, the downtown area. And now there's a lot of changes going on, a lot of sports teams wanting to move in, a lot of investment going into the area, looking forward to the Olympics and what that's going to do, especially comparing to what happened when the Olympics came to Salt Lake the last time and how much that changed. I mean, that's when we got things like Gateway, the Spaghetti Bowl, or like the I-215, I-80, I-15 connecting in the middle there downtown. We got the Kearns Olympic Oval. We got the Olympic, all the Olympic stuff up in Park City and the ski jumps. So it's fun to see how much that's changed, but really focusing on what we can do in this next phase of the Olympics to help get more infrastructure and support to keep growing this amazing city. So talk to Ava about a lot of these issues, a lot of what she's focusing on, and as well as some of the hot topics that I know that all of a lot of Utahns care a lot about the environment, the Great Salt Lake levels, as well as how many people are moving here and how do we support that. So excited to share this conversation with you. She's amazing. I'm so excited to see how she's going to further blossom and grow in politics and in the local area, because she's just so eager to help and make the world a better place and just such a different taste of representation than we've had before. Very young, she's only 27 years old and serving on city council, the first real Gen Z leader that we've had. So excited to continue to watch her career, but excited to introduce you all to her. So let's hear from our convo. Enjoy.
Oh yeah.
We will go.
That's great.
From there. Ava Lopez Chavez.
Yes.
That's so me. Many consonants.
It's even longer than that, actually. That's just the shortened version.
Cool. No, I'm excited. I know that this is kind of like, so I would like to start with like how we ended up like sitting down together. Because this one was a funny one for me, because I mean, you probably remember it just as well as I was, because only a couple of weeks ago, but I'm sitting at Edison working and like, I am very much like compartmentalized. Like if I'm working, my brain is just blinders up, focused, ready to go.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you come up to me and you're like, hey, I didn't recognize who you were. I've seen you here, but I didn't recognize until I saw the stickers on your computer.
Yeah, I was going to say it was the sticker on the back.
Uh-huh. And in my head, I was like, what stickers do I have on my computer? Because I have like, I've just always had them on my computer. So at work, I always know which one's mine.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, Small Lake City. I was like, oh, wait, she probably recognized me from that. And you're like, yeah, sorry. To use my full title, my name is Councilwoman Ava Lopez Chavez. Been following you for a little bit, but yeah. I've got to go to a meeting. Have a good one. And I was like, what just happened? But it did.
You're like, wait.
Yeah, it was.
You're like, did a Salt Lake City miracle just occur in front of me?
Well, and it's like, I always joke about it, but they always just like randomly happen all the time now.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they always do if you're from here and you run into people you
totally,
know.
Totally, I was going to say.
But once you start chasing that energy, it just compounds on itself and it's nonstop.
Yeah.
But it's always been super fun.
Hey, the compounding interest of being a Salt Laker is that you're going to diversify your portfolio of friends and end up in every industry. And next thing you know, you're on a podcast.
There you go.
Yeah.
It all, that's the end goal, right? Just make sure everything comes together in that way. Oh man. But yeah, I mean, I'm super excited because like, obviously I met you and then did my homework on kind of you, where you cover, and it's such like, I mean, you cover downtown. That is your,
all the actions happening in the state. Yep.
Exactly. And I mean, and there's been so many different topics that have come up recently, from sports to green belts, to, I mean, investing in all sorts of different ways into our economy. So really I'm excited to sit down and hear more about, I mean, kind of the whys and what's of what are going on. But before, I want to kind of set the tone of kind of how you got to be where you're at.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm like, if I can do it, you can do it too. I'm just another dreamer in the world that had a big dream and pursued it. Right. I woke up, I remember it was February 18th, called my mom and dad, and it's this stark moment. I'm looking in the mirror and I'm going, oh my gosh, after 5 years of working with Mayor Mendenhall, I think I have something different to offer the city. And I can even go further back.
No, let's go to the beginning. Yeah.
I mean, like, the real beginning of my origin story, if you will. And I like to think of it as like this anti-hero story. Like I have my character arc.
Yes.
And perfect. This character arc, I start out really angry as a child. My family was undocumented. And in short, I saw what terrible policy can do to separate families. So I kind of, it was like from age 8 till now, I've been on this rampage, just this war path to help advocate for families and for people that want to bridge into opportunities, want to break through, right? Want to pursue their dreams and goals and foundations. So fast forward into, you know, I was born here, but I was raised in Southern Idaho, got to move back at the end of 2014. And then in 2015, I started school. And I just kind of was like, what do I do? What do I study? Like, I'm the first in my family to go to college. And I was like, I guess I'll study political science. Got involved with the Democratic Party, got involved with some nonprofits. And before you know it, 10 years later, I'm elected, right? And it really is. It's like, it sounds so simple to say it. You know, if I had a Negroni in my hand, maybe I'd be a little more emotional about it.
There you go.
But seriously, it really has been this like lifelong dream of mine to be an elected person, to learn urban planning, and to justify righteous policies, if you will, that invest and further bridge these gaps that I see in communities. And in many ways, we'll talk about them through different segments like Japantown today. We have the ability in Salt Lake City, between 100 South, 200 South, 200 West, and 300 West, this little sliver by the Buddhist temple on the backside of the Salt Lake Convention Center, adjacent from the Delta Center, thanks to National Hockey League moving in. And rumor has it, it's not confirmed, but Arizona Coyotes might become the Utah something. We'll see if they keep their name. Thanks to this project and thanks to Ryan Smith's innovation in the downtown, right? Somebody actually seeing a future for downtown besides the people that live here.
Yeah.
We get to reimagine bringing back this community that was completely eliminated by the city and the county in the 1970s and 80s. So these are some of the really cool projects where I get to live out that dream. And I feel like I was just an artist handed, you know, the ability to put a stroke on a canvas and rewrite the history of Salt Lake City all over again. So for me, it means a lot because it's full circle. I'm 27, right? It's almost full 30 years of having this journey, having this story where my family can add its, you know, its layer of sediment to Salt Lake City's history and to really change it and to make it a path that justifies the future, right? One that everybody can leave a legacy behind. I talk about leaving this footprint behind, but like, physically, literally every day we walk these streets and the way we walk it is planned. It's made out, it's justified by the city, right? The way we invest in communities is the exact ability that we're building today. So we have to plan for a future and it's got to be a future that includes all of us.
Yeah. And I mean, I love that everything started with you growing up in this, I mean, community in the society that kind of you were an afterthought, you had this terrible policy that you saw the impacts of. And really it's like, I don't want to say like chip on your shoulder, so to speak, but like it
toughened me. It was like, I was like this kid having these legal conversations with adults being like, you know, I think the world could be better and this is what I would do about it. What about you, Chuck?
And they're like, that's nice. Go back to the kids table. And it's so funny to see you now because I mean, again, you go to college as a first generation college student, graduate, and then you get to spend the time with Aaron Mendenhall. I mean, when the time when you were working with Aaron, did you know that your next step was going to try to be in local politics, or is there something that you learned or something that like made that moment?
And there were other advisors. Like I think of Rebecca Chavez Houck when she was serving at the House of Reps. I just absolutely adored her. There's a lot of other colleagues, but what clicked for me at the municipal level was this, and it was, you know, there's obviously lots of great idols and advisors and, you know, people that I would consider mentors to this day that influenced me. But really, it's amazing what you can see. It's an actual dollar goes a long way into a neighborhood and repairing a sidewalk and helping get a kid to school, you know, and paying a crosswalk guard, helping a senior center, for example, or to build a pharmacy or a grocery store. I mean, these have so just compounding investments, right, that bring dividends into community, and you just can't replace it. You can't replace that impact. So I never had this dream of the federal level, but I think in some ways I was like, you know, maybe I do need to go to the, to DC to go make change. Or you, what really opened my mind completely was, or you could do it in your backyard, you could do it in your own backyard today.
Totally.
and it will have this great impact on your state. And maybe that impact from your state will have an impact at the federal level. So instead of top-down approach, I've really adopted this community ground level framework of, you know, organic resiliency can really build longitude all the way from the bottom up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such an interesting way to think about it too, because I want to go back to your example of like Japantown, which if you were to look at downtown Salt Lake City mm-hmm. and you were to say, which street do I feel like I've never spent any time uh-huh. on? I never hear anybody going about. It is literally that strip between Second and Third West on
Second West.
And then you like, yeah. I remember the first time, I think I was in like early 20s, like walking home or like walking to my parking spot from the Jasmine's, like, wait, why have I ever been here?
Is this? Yeah.
It was so different. Uh-huh. And so I do love that that gets to play a big part in, I mean, the NHL coming here because, uh-huh. I mean, for people who don't know, I mean, Utah's a pretty rich like Asian American history.
Oh, we have
both good and bad.
Absolutely.
And it's so funny because I lived in Seattle for a time, uh-huh. which has a huge Asian culture, a huge Chinatown market, like uh-huh. so much good. I mean, Asian food was like my favorite cuisine of all time. Yep. And then you go back and you're like, wait, there literally was like so much history here from, I mean, building the railroad and having this be the like ending spot of it all. And the Asian population playing such a big role into there. And I love that we are championing that more because again, like there's been this time that's been so forgotten.
Yeah. I think to me, this is an ability that we have to tell the history, to face it, and to justify it, and also bring back that culture, that diversity, right, and implement it in our city long term so that all generations of Salt Lakers can learn about it, enjoy it, and to really appreciate and celebrate it as a part of Salt Lake City's rich history, too. Mm-hmm. It's exciting to me. And I think what's brilliant is there's Japanese descendants that post-World War II is how they ended up. They have this lineage, but they're so proud to be part of Salt Lake's history.
Yep.
So the message that we want, and also to, you know, to Ryan Smith, to the investors, different developers that have a stakehold in our downtown, is that all of us want to celebrate the downtown and celebrate its diverse aspects. That's what you can't replicate that anywhere else in Utah. It's so niche and specific to Salt Lake City. It makes me really proud to represent it as somebody that's from a diverse community too.
Yeah. And it's been interesting to see there's been, I mean, other forces kind of trying to pull it away where, mm-hmm. I mean, going back to like Ryan Smith and talking about bringing the Jazz like Point of the Mountain and the Millers wanting to move the Bees all the way out to Daybreak. Yeah. But if like MLB team happens, then it's like, oh, like, we see the checkers and chess that you're playing, but I mean, how do you feel? Well, let's not go there quite yet. but yeah, I mean, I guess going back to like the election itself. So you go and you run for office, which again is like an amazing step to do. Uh-huh. And like, I mean, the first step of everything, but I mean, when they announced that you won and you knew that this was going to be your new position, I mean, what was that felt like?
Oh my gosh.
Mantle on your back or how did that feel?
Yeah. I mean, I would say I was so depleted at that point that I was there to celebrate my team. I was like, you guys did it. And they're like, no, you did it. I was like, I'm so tired. Yeah. I want to go to bed. I haven't seen my family in months, you know, and it really started to hit. I think I understood the responsibility. I was excited. You know, I would tell people, I'm like, I just want to get to work. And there's this moment and period of rest that you take after the election. And I really did. I gave it my all. I was like, if I'm going to do this, I love winning. I'm super competitive. This is why I play sports. And I have to win. Like in my mind, it was never a doubt that I would lose because I had the science, I had the backing, but also there's something about being authentic in today's political arena. Mm-hmm. That it's hard to replicate and it's not something you're taught. I think it's the humility of life experiences and being able to say, I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And I know where to seek and listen to those that know more than I, and to constructively advocate and build arguments and build policy around that. So, you know, I do thank my experience that I had at the mayor's office to help me bridge those gaps. And now it's been, you know, about three and a half months in office. And already I've seen how much power and authority words have to change community, to bring investment. It feels like gaps in my own, you know, in my own knowledge base were just filled. So now I am not blind. I feel like this veil was uncovered. My job now, and I tell my constituents, my neighbors, my job is to remove that veil so that you don't carry that fog. Mm-hmm. And you can see from my perspective, too. I'm not always going to get it right, but to know that you have access to another human that experiences Salt Lake the way you do, it's so important, right? I'm not a developer. I'm a renter.
Yeah.
I'm someone that's the first of the Gen Z generation to kind of step into power and authority. And I think for me, that compels me further to find my voice as an elected official and to advocate for the Salt Lake that we want and the Salt Lake that we deserve. We absolutely deserve a diverse, a dense, a walkable city, one with clean air, one with affordable rents and a pathway to home ownership. I want people to be invested in Salt Lake City long term. So when we're all old ladies, old gentlemen, old people, right, in the city, we can look back and say, we shake our fists and go, we did that. We built the city, you know, cue the song. We built this city.
Yeah. I'll start working on the remix for the election campaign.
I love it.
But I mean, I think that's exactly it. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who get so frustrated when we see, I mean, there's kind of two schools of thought, right? There's the people who are like, oh my gosh, it's changed. I want it back the way it was.
Right.
I don't want anything.
I miss the Small Lake City.
Exactly.
Right. Why does it feel so big? I get whiplash every day. There's a new skyscraper popping up. I can't afford these rents.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much traffic. What's going on to Small Lake?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Exactly. And then there's group that it's almost like, hey, I know change is happening, but I want to be ours, because at the end of the day, it's our city and we want it to be the way that we want to. And I like the things that, I mean, like you'd highlighted that, I mean, comparing what I've experienced in other bigger cities compared to Salt Lake are things that we like don't have. I mean, one, I love having a walkable city and being able to walk around, experience it, experience people, like even such a small detail of like walking past the same people almost every day, or like experiencing this street that you would always have with your windows up if you were driving around. Like it's those little details that start to really make a community feel that way. And then it helps us all experience all of those things better, especially as we see, I mean, all of these new, I mean, the ones that look at the new good buildings. But also I feel like there's a lot of people who see this change and kind of feel frustrated that it's in this direction and they don't really feel like they have any sort of control, and they just watch it all kind of change in the way that they want to. And then there's these negative repercussions of rent costs skyrocketing, houses skyrocketing, and it's hard because, like, I mean, comparing to Seattle, like I saw how high house prices can get.
Oh yeah,
and then it's just like Seattle; it's not as extreme, but there is a geographic limits to the Salt Lake area and how many houses and everything else that we can build.
Yeah,
and so it's nice to know that there are solutions, but at the same time, it can get pretty bad. And especially
it's interesting, you know, my approach to this all is it's called being a guerrilla bureaucrat. And basically that means, you know, the rules, you know, the system, but you're gonna break them. We're gonna break them. We're gonna change them. It's not just through policy. It's finding creative solutions to help tamper or change the way we're approaching things as a city so that we're not so dense about it, right? To be malleable. Today, there's more remote workers. I just learned 23% of our office space is vacant. To me, that poses the question, we need housing. There's office space available. What could we do to approach this in terms of housing? Or what does that mean about the square footage price, right? We see all over America today, cities, capital cities in particular, where the commercial real estate is starting to fall down. In Ohio, I believe it was Cleveland, you know, this commercial building sold for 98% under value. That's unheard of in today's housing market. You know, and those were apartments. But again, we're starting to see these ebbs and flows. For me, I physically feel it. I mean, there's the anxiety of, when am I going to become a homeowner? I'm saving, I'm doing all the things right. You know, mom and dad said to do this and it's still not working. Why not?
Yeah.
We just live in these dire circumstances, but they require leadership that acts in a way that approaches it from the sensitivity of the economics, but also the actual people facing these realities. When wages aren't on the rise, cities are the first line of defense to help people. We're the safety net that's encapsulating all of it. So every symptom that we see today, every social ill that people see and say, why does Salt Lake City face that? Well, we're trying to constantly build that wider net, build that tent so that people don't fall through these cracks. At the end of the day, that's how I'm approaching it, with the values of every dollar has to build back our community, because I know that's the Salt Lake City I fell in love with. And that's the Salt Lake City I'd like to help build and promote for each and every one of us.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I care about. I mean, we can get so specific about it, but at the end of the day, you know, urban planning is about building human-centric design and investing in the places where people feel that they belong and they feel a responsibility and stewardship towards.
Yeah.
Whether that's the Great Salt Lake, whether it's your downtown, or it's just your little neck of the woods, right? I mean, sincerely, every neighborhood in this city matters. And there are neighbors and communities that are fighting to keep it, that are fighting to invest in it. So I'm listening. If there's any takeaway from any listeners, that I'm actively listening. And I hope that people ask more questions of us.
Yeah.
That's called accountability, and that's important for government too. We function, we get our authority from the people that elect us,
mm-hmm.
and that means that we are equals in this. It's not because I carry a title that I have to promote my values. No, it's that we need to move in tandem, both the community members and the elected officials that represent them. That's how we're going to make and shift our city towards a more equitable place of belonging for everyone.
For sure. And I think that's such an important, I mean, that's what everybody wants, right? We all do want to have that sense of community. We want to have some sense of ownership. And when there's sense of ownership, there's a higher sense of stewardship and accountability.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important, like you said, because again, like you are elected by the people to be a representative of the people. They don't elect you because she's got the best ideas. Yeah, like exactly. She does this, like, yeah, go do it. We'll be over here. Uh-huh. And I think that's an important thing to remind ourselves of is this is our city and we put the people in the place, but at the end of the day, we're the ones that do need to take that action, but it does take action from us. And it does take some sort of, reliance and trust in it all. And if there's trust that needs to be built back, then there's a way to do that. But I mean, I think there's a lot of people that can align with your approach and way of thinking, especially, I mean, in the heart and center and core of, I mean, Salt, not only just Salt Lake, but Utah. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, like when you were thinking about running for office, I mean, is there any particular reason you chose, I mean, the area that you did, or was that just?
I mean, I had been living here 10 years.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say I chose it, right? I would say more so this is the community that chose me, right? Is the community that invited me from the very beginning. I remember I was so scared to move to Salt Lake. I mean, seriously, I'm this Idaho small town girl moving into the big city. And I remember I'd visited twice on vacation. I remember watching, this must have been 2012 because Alvin and the Chipmunks came out. And I went to watch it at the Gateway.
There we go.
The first thing I do, you know, I move into my apartment at the Landing. I go to the Gateway and I'm going, why is it empty? I remember having memories as a kid being like, it was packed.
Yeah, this is like where everybody
was. What happened? And to ask like a staff attendant and they were like, no, you need to go to City Creek. I'm like, what the heck is City Creek? Yeah. Now we know. And then my other memory was Hogle Zoo. And it was so iconic, this moment, because it was 08 and President Obama was running for the first time. And I remember going there and seeing all these signs of people, you know, calling for this president, and me again, being from Idaho, being like, oh my gosh, like, could he be elected? You know, could the first African-American president be elected in the United States? And these are just two very distinct memories of Salt Lake City that I think were so different and catalyzing. And to come back full circle and go, wow, this is the very downtown, the district that brought me those memories. And it is completely different from what I remember as a kid. But now I have this story to tell with it. So, you know, I in many ways, like, I'm so glad that I do represent the downtown, though, because it is the crossroads of not just our state and the West. You know, I say Salt Lake City, all paths lead to Rome, all roads lead to Rome, all roads lead to Salt Lake City. And all, you know, all of the intersections of the Rocky Mountain West is here in Utah. It's in Salt Lake City. It's why we have so much growth today. Mm-hmm. And it's why we have the hottest housing market still around the country, which is causing some of these symptoms we face as a city.
Yeah, lots of growing pains. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think it's so interesting to see how much Salt Lake has grown. Uh-huh. And it's because of like its core tenets and what we know it to be. I mean, I've sat down with enough people now to know like general themes of why people live here. I mean, there's amazing access to the outdoors.
Oh, yeah.
Cost of living, it's not as valid as it once was, but still.
Ooh, 10 years ago is perfect. Oh, yeah.
The greatest. And then like the one that always comes up is like, oh, there's an international airport very close by that I can get anywhere I want to. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, obviously we have, I mean, central in the country for so much logistical, I mean, that's kind of where like the Northwest Corridor has been so helpful for us is mm-hmm. a lot of this logistical needs that not only we need, but the country needs mm-hmm. and to be a part of that. And so I guess, as you think about, I mean, your role and like what's coming, I know you alluded to them before, but what are some of the key pillars that you are focusing on and want to make the biggest difference with?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the biggest one that, and I measure these values from the perspective of bringing families into downtown, regardless of what you call family. All of us belong to community, to families that we build ourselves. And to do that, it requires an approach to care for our environment. It means looking at our parks, investment in green space, right? Investment in our air quality in our Great Salt Lake. It also means looking at affordable housing. When we say that, we talk about rents. I'm talking about a pathway to true home ownership. Yep. I just got back from a conference where we looked at, you know, what does it take for cities to incur liability so that developers can take risk on high-rise condos? You know, these are the type of approaches that we need to look at as a city. And then to look at public safety, not just from the lens of policing, but also to look at it from a place of economic diversity, right? When people feel safe coming into your downtown, having these transactions, investing, whether that's as a business owner or as a future homeowner, making sure that people feel that place of belonging. And so I talk about it in terms of public safety, but really it's a place of belonging for people. And these are my three pillars for the next 12 months. What I see long-term for the district is to build a future that holds the potential to bring people and communities full-time into downtown, to really become that 18-hour city that we're meant to be, so that people are mobile, are actively walking, enjoying the place that they belong in. I mean, I just imagine this place, and I think this is what investors like Ryan Smith see. They see a city where people live, walk, approach entertainment, right? They take risk on their dreams in our downtown. Mm-hmm. That's such a huge responsibility. And to me, it's such a beautiful part of Salt Lake City is that dreamers come into our city because they believe they can make it happen here.
Totally. And it's interesting to see because when you look at the history of Utah, and especially with the things that have drawn the biggest economic impact, mm-hmm. it usually is dovetailed really well with a lot of the policy that we have. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the reason, I mean, two examples, one is real, the other one's real, but it's also kind of silly. One is Silicon Slopes. Uh-huh. We had a lot of, not only like from our own population demographic of having those roles, bringing those sales, like the customer success, mm-hmm. customer support, and then has become so much more robust as there's been so much success, but there's been policy paired with that to give that economic incentive to be here. Mm-hmm. And the silly example is like movies and entertainment that's been filmed here. Because mm-hmm. I mean, I went to East High School High School Musical was filmed. All of like our Disney Channel movies were filmed here because we had the best like incentives for people to film movies here. And so I think there is an opportunity, like you said, for the role of the city, the role of the district to be able to say, hey, listen, if we do want to have affordable housing, we have to create enough economic tailwinds to make this happen. Yeah. And like one easy thing that I hear a lot from developers is like, I mean, the risk that they have to assume in the difference between building a building of condos and a building of apartments. Oh. I mean, essentially, it's the same build. I mean, right. Got to be differences, but the builder's like, oh, if I build condos, now I'm liable for the next 1, 5, 10 years compared to this,
Done. Yeah.
And so I think there are some things that we can do because, I mean, it's hard to hear people where it's like, oh, cool, I was trying to save up like quote $20,000 for my down payment and then the price went up 10%. So now I'm already behind and I can't catch up. Uh-huh. And because wages aren't increasing at the same rate, it's like I feel trapped and mm-hmm. that there's nothing can happen. And I think that's one area that can really get to those people to have that optimistic sense of being where they want to belong. Because I like what you said, where it's like, I can't remember the exact verbiage you had, but it's like people should be able to have a way to be where they want to be and mm-hmm. feel the most accepted and seen. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, when I was going through my home buying process, everyone's like, well, why don't you just go to Lehigh? Why don't you go to Saratoga? Right, why don't you go to Eagle Mountain? Why don't you go up to like Farmington? I'm like, and I might get made fun of for this, but like, I consider myself so much more a Salt Lake citizen than I do a Utahn. Like, this is where I want to be. I do like being in the energy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't settle, be like, well, I want to go to Saratoga Springs because it's like cheaper. I'd probably, I'll just rent here. Like, I'd rather be in Salt Lake.
There's so much pride in being a Salt Laker. And I think this is what I feel. I just got back from a conference in New York City and everyone's going, gosh, don't you love New York? Wouldn't you move out here? And I'm going, no, your weather's awful. You don't have access to outdoors. I'm like, you know, the lifestyle I have over there. I wake up, I go to the gym, I run a trail, I go back home, I prepare for the workday, right? I can take all these meetings, I can go to events, I can go paddleboard at the end of all of it. I come back, I dress down, you know, or dress up for the night. I mean, there's just so much you can compartmentalize and compact into one day here where your 24 hours they're just so fulfilling in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. All filled with community, all filled with the outdoors and nature and all the pleasuries of the city. And I'm going, no, I miss my city. I want to be there. This is my home. I want to be an old lady in Salt Lake City. So, I deserve to age in place here.
Yeah. And like, that's what I always talk to people about, because I'll talk to people and be like, oh, yeah, Salt Lake's so boring. There's nothing going on. I'm like, yeah, maybe to you. But also the nice thing is like, this is an easy place to live. Uh-huh. And like, everything's very accessible, a very high quality of life, a very high happiness index. And it's like, oh, you want to go see like New York? Like, cool, New York, there's so much going on. So great. Like, I agree with you. I wouldn't, at this point in life, I would never move to New York unless I had like the highest degree of possible, but that's not going to happen. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's like, yeah, cool. You want to go to New York? Go to New York for the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, cause there's a lot of places that are
beautiful. Guess what? I have an international airport that will take me there in no time.
Yeah.
And then I get to go back to my beautiful life here. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I like that, that we are focusing on, I mean, a lot of those costs, because that was one example that you said that the city can come help and find ways and creative solutions to get there. But I mean, as you think about tackling those issues, I mean, what are some of like the more tactical things that you think about to get the job
done? It's all in our budgeting process and also our redevelopment agency. And, you know, without getting too far into the weeds, the point is that your city sets the priorities mm-hmm. for how we invest these dollars. There's actually nothing that prevents us from investing in these type of housing models that would diversify our portfolio. If the market's not meeting us where we need it to be, we have to be the ones that come up and literally play ball to build that supply out for people. Otherwise, if we don't do it, housing takes generations, I mean, literally decades to build out to have long-lasting impact. This is important to us. I think I read an article that said Daybreak is over halfway done being built, but the original plan calls for much more housing. You know, The Point is another housing development that they're breaking ground on. There's so many more that the state's looking at, but Salt Lake City also has the ability to build, and we see our skyline changing, but it's not reflecting the housing needs that we mm-hmm. need. It starts with housing. People need to be housed. Their basic needs, right? Maslow's hierarchy of basic yes. needs need to be met mm-hmm. so that people can be happy, be fulfilled, and be innovative and be creative and build the community that we deserve and the one that we love and see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love that. And kind of going back to one of those next pillars you had is, I mean, the environment itself. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously Utah is, especially Salt Lake, is faced with a lot of interesting environmental issues that are
catastrophic conundrum.
Yes.
Unique to Utah. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, like the two that everyone talks about. I mean, air quality and the Great Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Because like there's people's like, oh, like even if I could afford to buy a house, do I want to buy a house if this place is
right? It's like the climate clock countdown. It's like, wait, 5 years. 5 years till what?
Yeah.
Is that real?
Yeah. Exactly.
Hey, it's me, the host of the Small Lake City podcast, Eric Nilsson. Hope you're enjoying today's episode. And if you are, make sure to like and leave a review, as well as subscribe to the podcast so you can hear more of the great guests that I have coming your way. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok under the handle Small Lake Pod. Small Lake Pod on Instagram and TikTok. Also, if you prefer video, then make sure to head over to the YouTube channel and subscribe there as well. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
And so, I mean, and it's always been, and I've had other people on the podcast who have said similar things about like, oh, there's nothing we can do. It is what it is and go from there. But I mean, as far as the nonprofits and people that you work with,
yeah.
I mean, what are some of the ideas we're floating and what do you think that we could do?
I mean, I would rebuke it and say, no, there's absolutely, we are empowered to act. And what's important is, you know, the state did something really critical that people forget about, which is the Great Salt Lake is half its current size. We cut it in half so that we wouldn't further erode it, so that we could contain the water levels and at least help that. Salt Lake City Corporation is one of the largest water shareholders, and we have a brilliant director that oversees this named Laura Briefer, and she's amazing. Laura, if you're listening, I'm so proud of you, because you have the foresight of saving and containing millions of cubic feet of water to be pushed literally through our sewage system, through our water lines into the Great Salt Lake in a way that's sustainable, that's eco-friendly, and that's helping perpetuate this environment so that we can have this amazing snow that we have. You know, you may have heard of it, but oh, yeah. No on earth. It's bringing us the Olympics, guys.
Yes.
We should do everything we can to preserve it. But also, truly, our whole ecosystem relies on this saline body of water. I mean, it's like our Dead Sea. It's actually a place that I love because I learned how to sail on it.
Oh, fun.
I go row. Yeah. It's got some of the best sailing you'll find on the planet randomly in this ecosystem. It's just so amazing. I mean, it just goes to show the world is so complex and beautiful. We're the stewards that were given this land. Mm-hmm. We need to take care of it. I think for us, what I've learned is we work in systems that we need to measure and perpetuate good science behind it and data collection. So part of this is setting a target height for the lake. We need to know its depth and its height. And when it falls below, we need to act in a way that perpetuates water conservation so that we can access that flow to water more easily and directly impact the Great Salt Lake's flow. We saw that a few years ago. I mean, we're still in this sustaining drought. And in short, everybody has the responsibility to play. It's harder to maybe measure water consumption. But really, truly, like using less water has a direct impact on the Great Salt Lake.
Yeah.
But the other ways that we need to target it is, you know, coming up with creative policies where our water rights, and this is more of a state issue, but our water rights are complex, where farmers feel the need to use them, because if you don't use them, you lose them. That's the whole point in Utah. And Luckily, Governor Cox stepped in and said, okay, we're going to allow you to lease or sell your water rights without you having to lose them permanently.
Yeah.
Because that's valuable too. So, you know, there's lots of ways to consolidate water rights. Luckily, other attorneys do this work
yeah.
for me. So I get to just regurgitate what we're doing. But setting that target date will help us greatly. I think also just acknowledging we live in a desert, we need to adapt to it.
Yep.
Right. So Salt Lake City's looking at, you know, vegetation. We just changed our landscaping ordinance so people could have more of the ability to do xeriscaping without further burning the city with climate change. That means the core heat of our city needs to be lowered a bit. Mm-hmm. We are seeing extreme changes also in temperature. You know, Vegas is crazy. Salt Lake City gets really hot. We're starting to have those 110 degree days. I think I experienced it twice last year. Ugh. Where I wouldn't even step outside unless I was in Echo Reservoir or in somebody's pool.
Exactly.
No, I need to be in water. It's too hot. But these are some of the changes. And I think something that really makes me think more about just ecological systems is we're going to see more and more climate refugees in our city. And this is a huge debate happening on the national scale. But really, even here, we saw people during the pandemic come to Salt Lake City, move here, Americans moving in mm-hmm. because they wanted access to the outdoors. We're going to see that on top of, you know, this ongoing drought. We don't have enough water for the people that want to move here. So it's up to cities like us to think smarter about how we use our water. And I'm really proud to say that actually we consume less water today and more efficiently than we did in the 80s.
Cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So it just goes, human innovation goes a long way, and your city's definitely looking at innovative ways to spread every water droplet throughout the valley.
Yeah, I mean, it's
there's so much science behind this. It's amazing.
I can't even imagine, especially
it's amazing
thinking about all the ins and outs and where it all goes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, especially like you said, I mean, so much of this has to do with, vegetation and people, I mean, their own livelihoods and their farms. And again, it's like, oh, if I have this water right, if I don't use it, I'm going to lose it. So uh-huh. why wouldn't I use it and let you tell me what I can do? And being able to take a little bit of that back to your point, like Salt Lake is growing in population. That trend isn't changing. If not, it's accelerating. And we have to be able to be more efficient with our water and hopefully it doesn't get to a point where it's like a dune still suit where it just collects all of our body's evaporation and sweat and just recirculate that every day.
Yeah, we definitely don't want to live out.
Yeah. Dune. Yeah. No, thank you.
Beautiful cinematography. We want to leave it in fiction, not in reality.
True. Yeah. We'll leave Zendaya and Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah.
also kind of want to talk about air quality. Uh-huh. One of my good friends, like David Garbett, O2 Utah, someone who's very adamant about what we can do to have air quality. I know he passed some legislation last year that got that helped a lot with the toxic pollution. Oh, that's heavy chemicals, especially heavy metals out of the air. But I mean, from getting to where we need to be, knowing that there's more people coming, what do you think is part of that playbook to get our air quality a little better?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is there is pollutant matter today that's really bad and affecting us disproportionately, where if you live on the west side, you're more likely to incur and to have asthma over time that's induced by poor air quality exposure, right? Just point blank, this is coming from the very tires that we use every day release this terrible pollutant matter to the Great Salt Lake eroding, drying up. These are intersecting issues that feed into each other. Mm-hmm. The misfortune of a drying lake is that you reveal all these toxic minerals and asbestos and arsenic that's just trapped in the water that otherwise wouldn't affect us. Now it's prematurely melting the snow and it's air that we breathe consistently. And so I think we need to be, one, we need all of us, every Salt Laker needs to think very specifically about the air we breathe, right? This is a matter that is serious. It does scare me personally when I saw an NPR report today saying, what's Utah doing about it? And it's just kind of like,
what are we doing? What are we not doing?
Yeah, we're growing our inland port, guys. Yeah. We need the look how many jobs we're building. And again, I'm approaching this from indoor air. I like to be a pragmatic. I like to think of myself that way at least. And I'm going, okay, this seems like a very big issue. That's a statewide issue that we can try to caress and to deploy with our state legislators and our leaders. But if they don't want to listen, you know, ultimately, what's the impact we can have? And again, as a city council member, I'm thinking indoor air quality, making sure that this pollutant matter doesn't permeate our brains, because it does. I learned that from physicians for better, healthier environments. They had a whole, data presentation on this, and it was just amazing. I was like, wow, this permeates directly from your nostrils into your brain memory. I mean, it's just a direct poison to your brain. That's really scary. That's terrible. That's like worse than blood toxins.
Yeah, just go out for a nice run outside in the middle of the inversion.
Yeah. And, you know, so I'm going, okay, we spend the majority of our lives indoors. This is a fact. This is disproportionately hurting our elderly population and our youngest minds, meaning youth K through 12 or younger. And how do we protect them? You know, how do we actually protect it so that the most vulnerable class of people can actually be protected? And it's through air quality, it's through HEPA filters. We have ways of filtering our air and doing this. So while we're trying to save the Great Salt Lake, while we're trying to regulate the type of dust particles and construction and, you know, energy that's really hurting us, because it's also energy use that's providing all this carbon pollution, you know, how do we protect these people? And that's the approach I'm trying to take, is to say, hey, yes, there's some real terrible, you know, happenings in the world that I don't have the solution for quite yet. And scientists are warning us, but none of us seem to come together as policymakers. So in the meantime, how do we protect the people that want to just enjoy life and maybe live in bliss a little bit? They deserve, I look at my little sister who's, I tell people, this is my role model. This little 10-year-old is going to change the world one day and just tells me what to do. And I'm going, they deserve a high quality of life. You know, they deserve to inherit a world that's a little bit better and functions a little bit better too. How do we protect them? And a simple solution like an indoor air filter can really go a long way.
Yeah.
You know, so providing that type of gap, and, you know, for us, it's education. It's also cost of the air quality, and then making sure we distribute them. That's going to have long-term outstanding effects and prevent future asthma or health dilution, you know, this erosion in our actual lungs.
Yeah. And it's always like, and one thing I was talking about with some friends the other week, it's like kind of frustrating in today's world, because like a lot of people will look at policymakers, public officials, be like, well, fix it, fix everything.
Yeah. They're like, you are the one to blame. You obviously are the one that holds the magic wand.
And then it's like, I mean, I have friends that drive like these huge diesel trucks. I'm like, I hate the air quality. I'm like, well, you know,
maybe
don't, you know, make it worse, or drive alone everywhere, or water your lawn 50 times a day. Uh-huh. Like my last place I lived across the street from this guy, and he was probably out there 6 hours a day just watering his lawn.
Wow.
With a hose in hand. And like everyone in the neighborhood's like, is he okay? Like, what's going on? Like, yeah, he's just watering his lawn. And we're like,
hey man,
like, maybe don't, like, you'll be fine.
The world's on fire. You don't have to do that.
Exactly.
I mean, the point is there's creative solutions to everything. If you really go digging into issues, there's actually ways that people can advocate to their, you know, city council members, their legislators, their federal congress people, for some actual tangible solutions. That's the approach I like to take. You know, and something I'd like to mention is remind people, you have access to a high pass. You have access to UTA, right, to transit. I mean, there's lots of ways to do it. The more we use these solutions, these products and services that we're trying to provide, the more it's almost like the proof of burden that we need to further invest in these operations that make a healthier, livable society. That's all we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you haven't ridden the bus, I would challenge everyone to take it once a year. Take transit. You'll get to meet new people. I mean, it's really a great experience. I think for many of us, we grew up in suburbia learning like, hey, I'm going to be able to drive one day. That's freedom to me. You know, what's really freeing is living in a place that you feel safe, that you know the environment's not going to cost you years of your life, that you know you can appreciate and value. And that's what we're trying to build. You know, that's real freedom and wealth.
Yeah. And like, I do think that is somewhere where Salt Lake is lacking. And it's hard because, again, we have so much history and culture of being like, I have a car, I'm going to go everywhere via my car.
Yeah.
And to your point, like, yeah, there's like that freeing aspect of it, especially when we think about like accessing the outdoors and part of the draw that brings everybody here. But it's like on the same part of it, it's like, I remember when I was living in Hardware back a couple years ago, and it was nice because like, oh, like Front Runner's literally across the street. I'm going to buy an electric scooter and I'm going to go hop on. And like, I was very practical about it because like, okay, if I get on Front Runner, I can have internet there, which means there's only 8 minutes of downtime from the station to the office compared to 30 minutes door to door.
Right.
And I was like, cool, let's do it. And like, it was great. I mean, I had a really good time. It was fun. Like, that's every cool morning, like working on the train, and I'd look over and I'd see Front Runner's the sunrise.
Great. Like, yeah, it's beautiful. Air conditioned, Wi-Fi, lots of people packed in it. And that's what we need, is to teach people, hey, you can access this and still have a high quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a burden to actually be transit friendly. It's a great thing. And you're going to be able to see the world from a different lens and perspective that otherwise you wouldn't advocate for. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're just advocating for car centric spaces, you're never going to build out these beautiful niche neighborhoods that everybody craves and wants. But the hindrance is actually car centricity. That's mm-hmm. the hindrance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's our reliance and a crutch of our own.
Yeah.
I also want to go back to kind of the way that you were proposing community. And I like how you're talking about a lot of, I mean, the green initiatives, making sure that we're using parks, because mm-hmm. I mean, I think there has been a culture change over the past 10 years, especially as like more people move to Salt Lake, they appreciate a lot of these things that we used to take for granted.
Yeah.
Where I remember when I was like starting to run more like 10 years ago, I'd go on a like lap around Sugar House Park and there'd be maybe like five of us. And then now if it's a nice day,
you are hopping
and weaving through people.
Uh-huh.
And so I know that that's not true for necessarily all of like the bigger parks around the Salt Lake area, but I mean how do you think about making sure those spaces are utilized more?
Yeah.
And some of the initiatives that you're working on to make sure that we get those spaces.
You know, and parks are a secret way for cities to conserve land that otherwise would be developed, and mm-hmm. it's a really great way to be a great steward for future generations is to have a park, you know, in your neighborhood, from a pocket park to a regional park. Sugar House Park is a regional park, you know, Pioneer Park, Regional Park. But then we have all these nooks and crannies, like Dinwiddie Park is actually a park in the downtown, but it's leased currently to the restaurant Ivy and Barley. But it's a downtown park, right? We have Gilgul Gardens, beautiful sculptures to be found there. Little pocket park also. And it's city-owned assets. And, you know, the way I see it is that we need to, increase their and promote their use by investing in them. It's not just for safety, but also for beautification, for the ability to rest. I mean, I have this great dream of turning, you know, our Liberty Park and Sugar House Park, for example, and even Pioneer Park to there. These are the gems. These are the prized jewels of our city, you know, our crown jewels that should be shown off to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And soon when we have the Olympic stage, I hope that these are places of, congregating so that everybody can see how beautiful we and what pride we take in our parks and our public spaces. And they just reflect the beautiful mountainous wildlands all around us, you know, from the Great Salt Lake to our beautiful Wasatch Mountains. I think this is what we have to show off to the world, is that this city is so unique to any other landscape you'll find, and that Utah itself is so beautiful that we might as well be this terrestrial planet. That's why so many people come here to film and shoot as if it were Mars. I mean, we're just so diverse in our nature and in our different terrain. And again, I look at these parks and go, they should be a reflection of that. And also they should be a place where people feel that they can come and congregate and have fun, read a book, take their kid on a walk, or come bring the dog, or challenge themselves and play some sports. So, we're having lots of conversations this budget season. I'd love to hear from people that hopefully they believe in that too. But if you'd like to see a change, come talk to me, you know, come talk to your council members and let them know, hey, I want to see something different. Or I think there's something missing in this park, like pickleball courts. We see an uprise in them, and that's great. It's a great, I hope it's not a trend. I'm a pickleball enthusiastic myself, and I'd love to see more people appreciate that and go out.
Yeah. I mean, it's and kind of going to the overall theme. It's like, it's our spaces, our places. And so if there's a way that we want to, engage with it and experience it, uh-huh. and we have ideas, and odds are, if you're thinking it, you're not the only one. So being able to bring those to the table and say, this is what we want, and here's how we're going to do it. I mean, I think that goes so much further than you think. I mean, even like you as an example saying, well, I want to see something better, so I'm going to go and do it. And so I'm going to go run for city council. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to start working on these things, uh-huh. which, I mean, obviously like very formal, very like an appointed thing to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, also going back to like our own personal accountability, like nothing's going to change unless something changes.
Yeah.
And why not you if you're that passionate about it?
Yeah, exactly.
But I want to go back to kind of something you alluded to of the Olympics,
mm-hmm.
because it's been interesting the more that I've seen, I mean, headline after headline. I actually ran into my friend's dad. So I live by like a kind of handlebar in North Salt Lake.
Absolutely.
And,
uh-huh.
and I stopped by. He's like, I go sit and have a beer. And one of my friend's dads was there, who, I mean, real estate developer, mm-hmm. Pretty well known in the area. And we just like sat there and talked for like 30 minutes. Like I literally like snuck a picture. I'm like, is this your dad? He's like, yeah, why is he
amazing?
Here? Like, I don't know, let me find out. And we sat there and talked about it. But I mean, anybody who's been here since 2002 or before then, you realize how pivotal that moment and all of those dollars went, because we had things like the Kearns Olympic Oval. We had the whole like ski jumps and long jumps up in Park City. Mm-hmm. We have Gateway. We had the Spaghetti Bowl that was built. We had tracks and like so much of these things that we take for granted, but are such a huge piece of the way that we experience that. I mean, the city and the area now, I mean, as you look forward towards, I mean, 2034, what are some of these similar projects that you think we could do to have that same sort of impact for us? Not only just to have a great face to show for the world, but then also have a lasting legacy that we can use to continue our growth.
Oh, I love this because I think it starts with the community benefit agreement, which was one of my projects as a college student. I was working with Utah Coalition of La Raza, which is a Latino rights organization. And the idea was we come up as a community, we come together, city, you know, city council is the one that approves the Olympics. So I'm excited to be on that. We're crossing our fingers that everybody approves of this. And from today's news, it looks like the International Olympic Committee is fully on board and no longer teasing us. I mean, it's pretty much set in sediment. And
you know, like that point in a relationship when you can both agree that you like each other.
And totally. Like, you know, we're DTR.
No more games.
Yeah, yeah. We're defining the relationship.
Yep.
We're committed to each other. Exactly. And we're about to say, I love you. Oh, just geez. A beautiful part. Yeah, I was going to say, oof, it's a really great time. It's called being vulnerable. Part of that vulnerability is to look at the community and go, hey, this isn't just symbolic. Actually, could we agree to some boundaries? Could we agree in this relationship that we have with the Olympic Committee that we're going to promote housing in a way that actually helps build that pathway that I'm talking about? By the way, air quality is actually a huge component to why we're going to have snow in the future or not.
Yeah.
If we allow the further erosion of our Great Salt Lake and other pollutant matters to enter our air and atmosphere, it hurts and undermines our ability to keep snow on those caps. On
Lake
those
Effect caps. Isn't just a bar everybody goes to on Second South.
Yes, it's not, although that's a great bar, and if you love jazz, that's the place to go. No, it's actual science occurring. I mean, again, the world's best snow on Earth, right, on the planet, is here because we have saline, this high salinity lake that can you know, evaporates, condenses over mountains, and the perspiration that comes out of it is snowfall that's fluffy and light and makes the best snow on the planet. So to protect that, we have to actually protect our Great Salt Lake. So I'm hopeful that climate scientists across the world can kind of come and intervene and provide us data. But, you know, in many ways, I understand the frustration that constituents feel. I'm really, I get upset and angered at times when I'm going, how much more data do we need? Because time is of the essence, and time is this limited component that we just don't have enough of anymore. So great that we're getting the Olympics, but I'm more interested right now in the contractual agreement that we're going to have with our community and say, and long-term, how do I look at constituents and my neighbors and my friends and say, hey, we made the best decision that's going to benefit all of us. It's not just going to be a giant party for the world, but it's going to be a party that celebrates you, Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a time that we're going to look at each restaurant, each business owner, each neighborhood, and celebrate you and your different identities. And we're going to uplift your voices. And we're going to make sure that the world knows that Salt Lake cares about its environment. Salt Lake cares about bringing and inviting people in. And that this is a place where dreamers make things happen. And we do good here, right? That we care about families. We care about our unsheltered neighbors. And we care about uplifting each other. That's the Salt Lake City I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I brought it up multiple times before, but I mean, it all comes back to me of the phrase in terms of like Deseret, that everybody, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're from here, you know it, especially if you're raised any sort of LDS, then you also know it. But I find it, the more I talk to people, especially like in diverse backgrounds and diverse, I mean, industries and places, I mean, when I'm talking with Blake Motorsiski and he's like, oh, the tech community here is so close knit and like people will help each other and rely on each other to create this community. And then the art world, I've learned from so many people that it's such a collaborative place and thing to do. And like, and even in the restaurant industry and hearing of like the founders of Baby's Bagels and the founder of Arlo, letting them use their kitchen so they can refine their recipe. And so I think it's like such an interesting dynamic that I think a lot of us are forgetting just over all of the strenuous things that have gone on in the past, like 5 years, but to realize that, hey, we are this workhorse that works better together when we're all communal and working together towards a common goal. And I do think that the Olympics is a great common goal that we can all rally behind.
It is.
Because like when you're talking about how can we get the contractual benefits of investing in our communities, investing in our homes, our backyards. And you think, I mean, it doesn't happen anymore, but like all of the old like Olympics they used to throw where it's like ruins now.
Yeah.
Because they just said, oh, we're going to do it in this cool place. Everybody shows up, they build it, great, and it's gone. Mm-hmm. And well, A, that should have never happened, but we learned from our mistakes, thankfully. And like the more that we can be like, hey, like we understand there's like a responsibility on us to create this environment, this atmosphere, these venues, but at the same time, like how do we do this? The people who live here can continue to use it and abuse it and do whatever we need with it in the future. Like even something like this domino effect of, I mean, like the Kearns Olympic Oval. Uh-huh. Like I'm not a speed skater. Actually, I met someone here. She's actually a member who's a speed skater. Her name's Sarah. Anyway, I digress.
That's amazing.
But like I grew up playing like indoor lacrosse there because they have indoor lacrosse in the winters when I was growing up. And so it's like, no one could look at that and be like, well, I don't play hockey or like speed skating. You're like, yeah, but there's also so many other things that it benefits the community that isn't just like a mall or a freeway. Uh-huh. And so I think the more that we can be vigilant, especially have people who are in those conversations being vigilant of how can we make sure that these dollars go a long way? Because like almost started with being able to see how much impact a single dollar can have or all this money invested in a single place. Like, we can use that.
I want people to imagine this. Salt Lake City is small, but it's fallow ground that we could sow seeds of investment that actually bring back these fruitful trees to everybody. That's an abundance where everybody can take part in, right? And for me, I talk about this is that at some point, Athens was this great innovative place where thought leaders, innovators came. And Salt Lake City is my version of Athens to me. And hopefully to everybody that's listening is that they can see themselves, imagine themselves in a future of Salt Lake where they're invested, they're tied to this land, whether it's through housing, a business, again, right, a community, some sort of place that brings them that sense of belonging. That's what we're dealing with today. And I think when we talk about, you alluded to this earlier, trust, right? It's an actual non-tangible asset that government needs, that this institution I work with and needs to actually build progress in a way that is comforting to those that literally pay into this system. And so at least for me, I think it's a very delicate fabric. If I erode it, then shame on me because it's so hard to build and it's too easy to undermine. So for me, that's why I talk about an actual community benefit agreement with the Olympics is a contractual agreement that holds your government officials accountable to these actual tenants, right? We're in this relationship together. We're saying we're setting the boundaries because, babe, I love you and I want to respect you.
Yeah. We're going to have a healthy relationship.
Yes.
We're not.
We're going to have a secure attachment. This is going to be the healthiest relationship.
No codependencies, no toxic behavior, no gaslighting.
That's right.
Only the good stuff.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, what else do you want to talk? What else is on your mind as far as, I mean, being the councilwoman Ava Lopez Chavez outside of, I mean, Olympics, air quality, environment, affordable housing. I think that's a lot of things, but yeah, anything else you want to cover?
Gosh, I mean, we talked a lot about third spaces, and I think the whole point goes is that downtown's building back and it's building back better, baby. And this isn't Joe Biden's pitch. This is my pitch to Salt Lake City. It's a baseball pitch. It's also, what do they call it when you strike a hockey puck?
Oh, slap shot? Slap? Yes.
Is it a slap shot? Okay, this is my slap shot.
There you go.
Of Salt Lake also. Is that we shouldn't be afraid. Let's dig a little deeper. Please get to know your council members. Get to know your elected officials. We're better off as a community when we can each have and hold each other accountable, but also feel the responsibility of sharing common humanity with each other. That's really important. But disagree with us. You know, and I'm not going to be up here saying disagree better. Disagree with me because I am listening. You know, I think there's lots of hard decisions we make, but part of leadership is to guide us forward as a community. And so I hope that whoever can listen can sense or get a little bit of sense of how I'm valuing decision making every day. I'm bombarded with the most, zaniest and zealous questions I've ever experienced in my life. But it's those values of community first and family values that guide me. And hopefully to me, with my diverse background, with my experiences, that's able to guide us to a fulfilling, a safe, a community-led, community-first Salt Lake City that's built by us and for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, I mean, obviously age in politics is a very hot topic recently, but I mean, if you look at all the pictures of everybody who's currently under, I mean, all of our local government, it's nice to have some fresh blood, fresh faces, fresh perspectives, especially when you kind of hear more of the stories of, not generalizing too much, but your peers up there, you do bring a fresh perspective. You do have a very different background than a lot of them. And it, and not just by appearance, making it the easiest differentiation, but having these values and being wanting to improve them, wanting to be transparent, wanting to have that trust, and wanting to really be a tool and a resource for your own constituents. Because if you win, they win, we all win, then why wouldn't we work together on this? And the least divisive we can be, the better outcomes we're going to have.
Absolutely. That's right. And like I said from the beginning, if I can do this, you can do this too. I hope this inspires somebody to think about running in the future. I really think we'd be better off as a society if every one of us took the chance and became a candidate. It would change your whole world perspective and open your eyes, because these institutions, we uphold them. Just remember, all the power and authority that comes to us is just, we're just the funnels. I tell people we're the pass through, we're the middle manager, and really it's the constituents that get to determine the direction of the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or else you don't have a job anymore. They just vote you out. Someone else does it.
Hey.
But cool. Well, Ava, I want to wrap up with two questions I always end with. Number one, if you could have someone on the Small Lake City podcast and hear their story and what they're up to, who would you want to hear from?
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a really good one. Oh, that's interesting. Let's see. There's some really great people I've heard stories from. Hold on. That one I'm going to think on. What's your second one?
Second question.
I feel like I know too many people. Don't you?
I mean, it's like the blessing and the curse, right?
I was like, oh gosh, there's so many people. Who has the best story?
It's either like an In-N-Out menu or a Cheesecake Factory menu. And filtering through both are very two different tasks. And then secondly, if people want to find out more about you, a lot of your topics and things you're passionate about, what's the best place to find you and more information?
Okay, perfect. I have the answer for both. So I'll start with the first question. You should have David Ibarra on this podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, he's, I think, most famously known recently, at least, for being someone that was a mayoral candidate. But he's actually a ride or die for Salt Lake City, just love a champion of the city that I think is misunderstood, as am I, right? As are all of us. And I think he'd be fabulous to have on here. Just like longtime Salt Lake perspective, he's the guy to do it.
Oof, I love that.
I really think people, given, yeah, I think people should hear from him. The second one is you can find me really easily on Instagram. I'm really not on Facebook. I'm really not on Twitter or X anymore. Or you can, you know, email me. I would put my number out there, but, you know, we'll save that for another day. But find me on Instagram. It's EVA for Council. So Ava, F-O-R, Council. That's it.
There we go.
Yeah.
So make sure to follow her, show up, go to city council meetings, please. Meet her.
Every Tuesday.
It's our city. We got to fight for the one that we want. But it was so nice to sit down with you and hear a little bit more about what we're working on and working towards, and excited to see, I mean, all the stuff that you're accomplishing, and very excited to see what else happens in your career.
Thanks so much. I'm excited to report back.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Small Lake City Podcast. Don't forget to like, follow, review, subscribe, and share this episode with your friends. And we'll catch you next week. We'll see you there.